Or, just because of familiarity, it is not now obvious to us how the preposterousnesses of the old system must have seemed to the correlates of the system preceding it. Yet jet black silvery moon. Altogether, then, it may be conceivable that there are phenomena of force that are interpretable as light as far down as the clouds, but not in denser strata of air, or just the opposite of familiar interpretations. I now have some notes upon an occurrence that suggests a force not interpreted by air as light, but interpreted, or reflected by the ground as light. I think of something that, for a week, was suspended over London, of an emanation that was not interpreted as light until it reached the ground. Lancet, June 1, 1867. That every night for a week, a light had appeared in Woburn Square, London, upon the grass of a small park, enclosed by railings. Crowds gathering police called out for the special service of maintaining order and making the populace move on. The editor of the Lancet went to the square. He says that he saw nothing but a patch of light falling upon an arbor at the northeast corner of the enclosure. Seems to me that that was interesting enough. In this editor we have a companion for Mr. Simons and Dr. Gray. He suggests that the light came from a street lamp, does not say that he could trace it to any such origin himself, but recommends that the police investigate neighboring street lamps. I'd not say that such a commonplace as light from a street lamp would not attract and excite and deceive great crowds for a week, but I do accept that any cop who was called upon for extra work would have needed nobody's suggestion to settle that point the very first thing. Or that something in the sky hung suspended over a London square for a week. 21. Knowledge, December 28, 1883. Seeing so many meteorological phenomena in your excellent paper, Knowledge, I am tempted to ask for an explanation of the following, which I saw when on board the British India Company's steamer Putna, while on a voyage up the Persian Gulf. In May, 1880, on a dark night, about 11:30 p.m., there suddenly appeared on each side of the ship an enormous luminous wheel, whirling around, the spokes of which seemed to brush the ship along. The spokes would be 200 or 300 yards long, and resembled the birch rods of the dames' schools. Each wheel contained about 16 spokes, and, although the wheels must have been some 500 or 600 yards in diameter, the spokes could be distinctly seen all the way round. The phosphorescent gleam seemed to glide along flat on the surface of the sea, no light being visible in the air above the water. The appearance of the spokes could be almost exactly represented by standing in a boat and flashing a bull's eye lantern horizontally along the surface of the water, round and round. I may mention that the phenomenon was also seen by Captain Avern, of the Putna, and Mr. Manning, third officer. Lee for brace. P.S. The wheels advanced along with the ship for about 20 minutes LFB. Knowledge, January 11, 1884. Letter from A. M.C.D. That Lee for brace, who sees so many meteorological phenomena in your excellent paper, should have signed himself the modern Ezekiel, for his vision of wheels is quite as wonderful as the prophet's. The writer then takes up the measurements that were given, and calculates a velocity at the circumference of a wheel, of about 166 yards per second, apparently considering that especially incredible. He then says, from the nom de plume he assumes, it might be inferred that your correspondent is in the habit of sailing close to the wind. He asks permission to suggest an explanation of his own. It is that before 11:30 p.m. there had been numerous accidents to the main brace, and that it had required splicing so often that almost any ray of light would have taken on a rotary motion. In Knowledge, January 25, 1884, Mr. Brace answers and signs himself J.W. Robertson. I don't suppose AMCD means any harm, but I do think it's rather unjust to say a man is drunk because he sees something out of the common. If there's one thing I pride myself upon, it's being able to say that never in my life have I indulged in anything stronger than water. From this curiosity of pride, he goes on to say that he had not intended to be exact, but to give his impressions of dimensions and velocity. He ends amiably, however, no offense taken, where I suppose none is meant. To To this letter Mr. Proctor adds a note, apologizing for the publication of A.M.C. D's letter, which had come about by a misunderstood instruction. Then Mr. Proctor wrote disagreeable letters, himself, about other persons. What else would you expect in a quasi-existence? The obvious explanation of this phenomenon is that, under the surface of the sea, in the Persian Gulf, was a vast luminous wheel, that it was the light from its submerged spokes that Mr. Robertson saw, shining upward. It seems clear that this light did shine upward from origin below the surface of the sea. But at first it is not so clear how vast luminous wheels, each the size of a village, ever got under the surface of the Persian Gulf. Also there may be some misunderstanding as to what they were doing there. A deep sea fish, and its adaptation to a dense medium. That, at least in some regions aloft, there is a medium dense even to gelatinousness. A deep sea fish, brought to the surface of the ocean, in a relatively attenuated medium, it disintegrates. Superconstructions adapted to a dense medium in interplanetary space sometimes, by stresses of various kinds, they are driven into this Earth's thin atmosphere. Later we shall have data to support just this, that things entering this Earth's atmosphere disintegrate and shine with a light that is not the light of incandescence, shine brilliantly, even if cold. Vast wheel-like superconstructions, they enter this Earth's atmosphere, and, threatened with disintegration, plunge for relief into an ocean, or into a denser medium. Of course the requirements now facing us are not only data of vast wheel-like superconstructions that have relieved their distresses in the ocean, but data of enormous wheels that have been seen in the air, or entering the ocean, or rising from the ocean and continuing their voyages. Very largely we shall concern ourselves with enormous fiery objects that have either plunged into the ocean or risen from the ocean. Our acceptance is that, though disruption may intensify into incandescence, apart from disruption and its probable fieriness, things that enter this Earth's atmosphere have a cold light which would not, like light from molten matter, be instantly quenched by water. Also it seems acceptable that a revolving wheel would, from a distance, look like a globe, that a revolving wheel, seen relatively close by, looks like a wheel in few aspects. The mergers of ball lightning and meteorites are not resistances to us, our data are of enormous bodies. So we shall interpret, and what does it matter? Our attitude throughout this book. That here are extraordinary data, that they never would be exhumed, and never would be massed together, unless. Here are the data. Our first datum is of something that was once seen to enter an ocean. It's from the Puritanic publication, Science, which has yielded us little material, or which, like most Puritans, does not go upon a spree very often. Whatever the thing could have been, my impression is of tremendousness, or of bulk many times that of all meteorites in all museums combined, also of relative slowness, or of long warning of approach. The story, in Science, 5-242, is from an account sent to the Hydrographic Office, at Washington, from the branch office, at San Francisco. That, at midnight, February 24, 1885, LAT 37 degrees N, and long 170 degrees E, or somewhere between Yokohama and Victoria, the captain of the bark Inner Witch was aroused by his mate, who had seen something unusual in the sky. This must have taken appreciable time. The captain went on deck and saw the sky turning fiery red. All at once, a large mass of fire appeared over the vessel, completely blinding the spectators. The fiery mass fell into the sea. Its size may be judged by the volume of water cast up by it, said to have rushed toward the vessel with a noise that was deafening. The bark was struck flat aback, and a roaring, white sea passed ahead. The master, an old, experienced mariner, declared that the awfulness of the sight was beyond description. In Nature, 37-187, and L. Astronomy, 1887-76, we are told that an object, described as a large ball of fire, was seen to rise from the sea, near Cape Race. We are told that it rose to a height of 50 feet, and then advanced close to the ship, then moving away, remaining visible about 5 minutes. The supposition in Nature is that it was ball lightning, but Flammarion, Thunder and Lightning, p. 68, says that it was enormous. Details in the American Meteorological Journal, 6-443, November 12, 1887. British steamer Siberian, that the object had moved against the wind before retreating, that Captain Moore said that at about the same place he had seen such appearances before. Report of the British Association, 1861-30. That, upon June 18, 1845, according to the Malta Times, from the brig Victoria, about 900 miles east of Adalia, Asia Minor, 36 degrees 40 minutes 56, NLAT, 13 degrees 44 minutes 36 E long, three luminous bodies were seen to issue from the sea, at about half a mile from the vessel. They were visible about 10 minutes. The story was never investigated, but other accounts that seem acceptably to be other observations upon this same sensational spectacle came in, as if of their own accord, and were published by Professor Baden-Powell. One is a letter from a correspondent at MT, Lebanon. He describes only two luminous bodies. Apparently they were five times the size of the moon, each had appendages, or they were connected by parts that are described as sail-like or streamer-like, looking like large flags blown out by a gentle breeze. The important point here is not only suggestion of structure, but duration. The duration of meteors is a few seconds, duration of 15 seconds is remarkable, but I think there are records up to half a minute. This object, if it were all one object, was visible at MT, Lebanon about 1 hour. An interesting circumstance is that the appendages did not look like trains of meteors, which shine by their own light, but seemed to shine by light from the main bodies.